WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, Feldis and Kale. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Serving the Concord area since 1995. You can call them at 603-225-7988. WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. Dan, how are you today?
I'm good, Ken. How are you doing?
Terrific, because our guest today, and it is a pleasure to have him with us and welcome him to Feldis and Kale, Boston Red Sox Hall of Famer Rico Petrocelli, a graduate of Sheepshead Bay High School, 210 career home runs, 773 RBIs, two-time All-Star, member of the Red Sox from 1963 through 1976. Rico, great to have you with us today.
Well, it's great to be with you guys, as always. I love talking baseball. It's a funny thing, you know, people say, hey, you probably get tired of talking. People come, you know, and ask questions. No, I can talk 24 hours a day about baseball, of course, and other things, though.
Yeah, other things. I know you're a true Renaissance man, Rico.
that's about how old I feel.
But Rico, you know, a multifaceted, an author. You know, you wrote a book, I know, in 2007 with Chaz Scoggins. Rico Petrocelli's Tales from the Impossible Dream of Red Sox, and it was a great book, and you revised it in 2017, I believe, with Chaz as well. So it's a terrific book. If you know everything about 1967, like I think I do, you're still going to find out more from this book behind the scenes with Rico. It's a great book. So and I tell you what, Dan, if you've never listened to Rico Weekends on MLB radio on the Sirius XM. He and Ed Randall do a show called Remember When. And I'll tell you what, Rico, for me, that is appointment radio. You guys do such a great job with that show, and the guests you have on are just amazing.
Well, Ed, you know, he's a very popular guy. He's a cancer survivor, and he has a number of, and stays in touch with a number of former players, you know, who have had cancer, they're doing very well, and he's raising money, and he's done a great job there. He's been in broadcasting for a while, and does a great job, so it's kind of fun to be on with him. And it's, you know what, it's great. What's great is to talk to the former players, managers, coaches, umpires, authors. And, you know, I get a kick out of it. I feel almost like a fan rather than a co-host. So, yeah, it's a fun show.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So give it a listen every Saturday from 8 in the morning till 10. Terrific radio, and, you know, it's not often that I would promote another radio show, but since it's Rico, I'll do it.
Got to do it.
Well, your show's great and has been, and you've been in the business a long time. We've been friends for, geez, I don't even want to say how many years, but and it's always fun talking with you, Dan, and so thanks for having me.
You're welcome, Rico.
Probably a lot of folks are wondering, and they may have already heard your analysis, but what happened to the Red Sox bats at the end of that?
Good question. After they had those two big games, you know, with all the grand slams, everybody's hitting. And
I said,
told friends, I said, I like that, but I know that that's probably not going to, you know, keep going. I mean, it just, the funny thing, it's almost like there's only a certain amount of hits, you know, in a bat. And I said, I just hope that they can, you know, put stuff together and get good pitching from, you know, afterwards. And all of a sudden, yeah, those same pitches that they were hitting, you know, for home runs and hits, they were fouling off or missing.
Yeah.
I'm saying, there it is now. What happens after that is they start pressing. you start pressing. Then they started to go after bad pitch and take the good pitch, and then they went after the bad pitch. And that is, I mean, an exact sign of guys pressing, you know, wanting to get something going or wanting to hit a home run, a tie game, whatever. And I said, oh, boy, you know, hopefully they can get out of it. And they just didn't. They just didn't. And but they had a great year, really did. I mean, you know, you could look at it, you could be disappointed because they had some good players. But, I mean, I picked them for, you know, having an off year and rebuilding the team in hopes that some of these young guys would come up and, you know, do a good job. And some of the players they got traded for and signed that would put together, you know, a career year. And some of them really did. I mean, they had some great years out there. But just, you know, getting into the playoffs, it's so tough. It really is tougher now than ever because all those extra games, the pitching staff has thrown, you know, so many innings, starters, and bullpen especially now. It's a different era now. It's bullpen as far as pitching goes. They all want to build up the bullpens, and I think, I don't know if they're ever going to have starters again, except for guys like Sale, you know. But, yeah, a guy throws, you know, guys starting pitches, they throw 100, over 100 pitches, five innings.
Yeah.
You know, and in the playoffs, if they go have one bad inning, you know, let's say the third inning, they're out of there. So here goes your whole bullpen. It's a different game, you know, as far as that's concerned. And, so it's tough, and it's tough to get pitchers.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Do you think this, you know, the openers, as it were, the openers, not really the starters, but the bullpen guys that start games, I think Tampa Bay started that a few years ago, the openers. And the fact that the starters are lucky these days to go four or five innings and, you know, not too long ago, you wanted seven or eight out of your starter, but now you're lucky to get four or five. Do you think that's going to continue, or is this maybe a sort of a byproduct because last year, you know, 2020 was such a short season and pitchers didn't get a chance to stretch out as much as they would like, and this had an impact this year? Is this going to be what we'll see in the future, Rico?
Yeah, I think so, especially in the playoffs. But you'll see it more and more because pitchers, you know, they throw 100 and some pitches. They nibble. How many times we're watching the games and how many times 3-2, 3-2, 3-2?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're nibbling. They get two strikes and they start trying to just make that perfect pitch and get to 3-2, and then either have to throw a strike or they walk the guy. So that's a problem, but that's what's happening now. Yeah, I think you're going to see more and more of the you know, guy starting pitcher throw two and a half innings or something like that, and then get out of there and just build your whole team around almost your whole team around pitching staff around the relievers.
Yeah.
Although, you know, you'll have guys that are starters, but they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be that patient with them and let them get maybe have a bad inning and then, you know, try to get out of it and go on. And they're just not doing that.
And
get out of there and let's go. Let's get I don't know how much the statistics, the cyber guys have to do with that, but that's the way it's going.
Now the analytics say a pitcher should never face a lineup the third time around, and you very rarely see it these days, that a pitcher will face a lineup the third time around.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly it. That's right. And which I guess, you know, it started a long time ago, and what happened in the minor leagues was that we got to see guys, the starters, pitch, and it seemed like some of them, not all, some of them fifth inning, sixth inning, second time around, maybe even the third, they started to get hit. And so the thinking was, well, we know this guy can go good five good innings, but that sixth inning, you know, facing the lineup again, just has trouble. So we're going to take him out. And that's how it started, you know.
Yeah, right.
And then other teams picked up on it, and that's how it is now. So they, you know, they figure this guy can only go, you know, five, six the most, you know, but we got to have that bullpen ready because, and even the bullpen guy, you know, a guy will go two innings and be pitch great, and he's out of there because the next guy is a, you know, sit-up man. So that's how it is now. So I don't think it'll change. I really don't, because it's so tough to get pitching anyway.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, and they're going to protect guys. The guys, you know, they're making a ton of money, and it's a big investment. And you want to hold on to guys, you know, if he's a pretty good pitcher. You don't want to see him get hurt. Managers are under tremendous pressure, you know, to go along with the stats and, you know, the cyber guys and all that stuff, or else their job, they're gone.
Yeah,
no question about it. And Rico, specifically with respect to the Red Sox building moving forward, I mean, they got a good foundation, no doubt, of players, you know, Xander Bogaerts, yeah. You know, and Devers at third, although Devers is no Rico Petrocelli in the field, I'll tell you that much. You know, you were one of the best third basemen in the history of baseball.
Well, thanks. He's improved. You know, remember his first year, he really had problems. But he's improved some. But, maybe he might end up at first base down the line. I'm not sure of that.
He might. Well, how do you see it moving forward for the Red Sox? What do they need to do to take this team to the next level?
Well, I think more than anything, it's pitching. You know, if they can get another starter and also solidify their bullpen. What happened to Barnes? You know, I mean, they need if you can get that real good closer, you know, and work your bullpen. And the biggest thing for teams now is depth. And if you have 25 guys on the roster, but you gotta really strengthen your Triple-A team so that you can bring a guy up, you know, and do a good job, and then he might have to go down again. But that's really important to have these guys ready because of all the injuries, especially the pitchers. But you know, they can position players. They can tweet it, you know, here and there. But they got a pretty solid lineup. It's not the hitting, even though they didn't hit. You know, the hitting really got them there. The first half was great, you know, and then they slumped, and then they came back. And they were a team who really never gave up. Oh, boy, they were a tough ninth-inning team, one of the best.
No doubt, yeah.
You know, so, I would say pitching.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. The guy that really impressed me this year, Rico, coming out of that bullpen, was Garrett Whitlock, the guy they got Rule 5 from the Yankees, of all teams, and I guess the scoop is that he's probably going to be in the starting rotation in 2022 and not in the bullpen any longer.
Right, yeah, I agree. And that would be great if his arm stays strong and he's got great movement on his pitches. He really does. He just needs to, you know, just to learn a little bit more you know, his mistakes are out over the plate. It's going to happen sometime, but if you keep your team in the ball game, and that's what he can do. So they have a couple of young pitchers that might make the team, but they might lose a few also. So it's a game. It's a guessing game, and yet they have so many statistics out there. And that's how they work now. You know, they'll try to get a guy who says maybe he throws more strikes than someone else. You know, he's the guy we want, or he can give us more innings if he can. But it's set up now, so you know, two innings, one inning. This guy, you got to pitch to three guys, right? You know.
Yep.
So that's another thing. So that that's the manager's nightmare.
Yeah.
But you know.
What do you think of that rule, Rico? When you come into a game, you have to face three batters.
Well, depends on what side I am. If I'm, on the side where I'm the team that, he's coming in and I'm hitting, I don't mind that. Because if he's a lefty facing a lefty and gets him out, and now a righty comes up, they can't take him out. Now, the games will be 5 hours, but Pete's sick.
Yeah.
Four and a half
is bad enough. Yeah.
Right. It's amazing. It really is. But, yeah, so there's some strategy involved, but, they pretty much know about each pitcher, when he might be having trouble or when to bring this other guy in. And so that's the strategy now, It's, so handling that pitching staff,
it's
very
not,
important.
And not an easy thing to do. Rico Petrocelli, the great Rico Petrocelli, Red Sox Hall of Famer, is our guest here on Feldus and Kale, and we talk about length of game. And, it's a marathon. Every game is a marathon. Now, I was looking back, Rico, at the 67 World Series, and the longest game was a game in which you hit two home runs, game six of that 67 World Series. And that lasted 2 hours and 48 minutes. That's about half what these games are lasting these days.
Yeah. Yeah. You know why? Because pitchers threw strikes. There wasn't as many walks, 3-2 counts, things like that. And pitchers, not all, but a lot of them, I would say the majority, got the ball and was ready to throw it.
Yeah.
Instead of walking around the mound, and hitters didn't walk around, after swinging and missing, and they walk around the umpire and wait to come back. None of that. It was just, let's go, let's go here. And that's what they're trying to get back to. The 22nd clock next year hopefully helps. I think more than anything, that's what they need to do. And maybe that'll make hitters stay in the box a little, stay in the box instead of walking around after every pitch taken or swung and missed.
Yeah.
So,
That would
and
be
they're
great.
Doing, thank God they're doing away with the man at second base in the extra innings.
you don't like that, huh?
No. No, I don't like it. Even if it would be an advantage for my team, that's just not baseball,
No.
I mean, hey, you got to earn it.
No, I would agree wholeheartedly. And what about the collective bargaining agreement will be up shortly, and they'll be negotiating that in the off season. And a lot of the experts, Rico, seem to feel that the 2022 season might be in jeopardy.
Boy, that'd be a big mistake. Big mistake. Yeah, really. I mean, if there's a lockout or a strike, oh man, I think people. This is. I'll tell you the truth. There's a lot of people that are, turned off right now. Baseball, because it's a slower game, and young people. They're trying to get young people, more interested in the game, and most of the young people are. Their attention span is not very, very long. They want action,
Yeah.
So they gotta start moving. They gotta start making plans or putting the clock in. And the umpires they've got to keep the guys. They're the ones that have to keep the guys in the batter's box. So little things like that, And the other big thing is the pitchers throwing a lot of pitches. Not only the starting pitcher threw 105 pitches in 5 innings.
Mm.
Okay, but what about the rest of the team? How about counting all of those? Let's see what the total pitches are for the game for each team. What is it? 200, 250? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, they get to those totals for sure these days. No doubt about it. Rico Petrocelli is our guest. Rico, hang with us for a couple of minutes here. And WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 in Concord, 101 FM in Manchester. Feldis and Kale proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Our guest is Boston Red Sox Hall of Famer Rico Petrocelli here on WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 Concord, 101.9 in Manchester, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Rico Petrocelli, Red Sox Hall of Famer, author, radio host, is with us here on Feldis and Kale. We were talking about the length of games. You know what I think is a mistake, Rico? You know, the games are so long these days, and, you know, the World Series games are, you know, getting up to, you know, 3.5-4 hours easily, and sometimes longer, and regular season games as well. But what I miss about the World Series is at least, Rico, one afternoon game. I think they're making a big mistake by not playing at least one game in the afternoon, whether it be a Saturday, which I think would be the best day for it, or a Sunday. I'm not talking about a weekday like it used to be, but just one day game. Don't you think that would help, you know, especially with the younger audience?
Yeah, it probably would help some, no doubt about it. But, you know, they're not going to do it because of they feel, I guess they, of course they research it, you know, they know what's going on, the TV networks and all that, and they just feel that the night games are going to get more people watching. And so the advertising dollars, you know, will be pretty high. But if they don't get, like this World Series, I mean, the networks must have been cringing to see Atlanta and Houston in it as opposed to, let's say, L.A. and the Red Sox.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are going to be for this World Series, but I don't think they're going to be very high at all. So that's where, you know, as far as the networks and the advertisers are concerned, that's what their concern is. So I don't see them. I don't see them doing it. Plus, at this time of the year, they're going up against football, college football, and people in other areas where there's no major league team, and the areas where the teams are out of it, you know, those people are going to start going to basketball and football.
Yeah,
let's face it, and then hockey too. I mean, so I don't think they'll do it. I think they'll stay night and just, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah,
get the teams they want in there.
I just feel bad because it was so much, you know, and I'm an old guy, Rico, but you know, and a traditional kind of guy, but I used to love going home from school and being able to watch the World Series in the afternoon, you know? You know, I know you remember that too. And
sure.
The kids these days, I mean, they won't even get past, especially on the East Coast, won't even get past the third inning of most games because it's so late, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think it's more than that. It's probably a whole show you could discuss that because, you know, it has to do with the popularity of the game now. Right now, they're really battling, and that's why a strike or a lockout would be, that would destroy the game. I think they've got to come to some, you know, agreement. But I mean, baseball is real. It's difficult because the playoffs and the World Series are right up against, you know, all the other sports starting up, and that hurts them. You know, they've expanded, and now, of course, baseball has expanded into almost November or into November.
Yeah.
So it's going to really be tough for them. They're going to have to come up with something, that's going to excite people.
No question, Rico. And Rico, you have had such a great career of different ways. For folks who might be out there listening and have someone maybe, you know, getting involved in high school baseball or Little League baseball, what kind of advice would you give to those players and also the parents of the players?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there's some great opportunities now. You know, Major League Baseball, they need players. They need not just pitching, but especially pitching. But they need players, you know, to to become very good and guys that can play the game. And the only way is for the players to commit themselves to the playing. I always tell the kids, I said, you like it. Oh, who wants to be a Red Sox player? Oh, all the hands go up. Yeah, okay. Are you willing to commit yourself? Instead of playing video games, you go out there and you practice. Throw a ball up against the wall. Take a bat, swing, get a tee, and just swing. Take 50 swings, 100 swings a day. And are they willing to do that? Are they willing to sacrifice? And you might not be able to do the things that the other kids do, you know. But if you love the game, you have to commit yourself and then work hard. It's like a ladder, you know. Each step as you get older, as you, you know, develop. And don't forget, athletes have to develop at a young age. I mean, let's face it, you know, you're 17 years old. And you're a baseball player, a pretty good one. You know, scouts are looking at you. College coaches are looking at you. So when are you going to develop that skill? Well, yeah, at a pretty young age. And so the more you're committed to it and do the things you need to do, take care of yourself and all that, be an athlete. You want to be, you know, be a professional athlete especially, then you got to live like that. Take care of yourself. Practice, work at it, you know, learn as much as you can, take lessons. There's nothing wrong, you know, you get somebody that's a good pitching coach or something, a hitting coach, you know, take some lessons. And I always say to the kids, play other sports too. So that's, you develop yourself as an athlete and the muscles, the cardiovascular, you know, this is it. This is, you want to be an athlete? You can't be you know, slurping on the couch playing video games for 2-3 hours a day. So anyway, that's my feeling. The parents, stay away from the kids. No, the parent. Let's face it, the parents. And I used to give batting lessons and, you know, all of that stuff. And the parents were there, wanting their kids to be a major league player. And they were tough on them, but you got to encourage the kids. The kids have to learn how to overcome adversity. They strike out, or they, you know, it's a big disappointment. The last hitter, they strike out, the team loses. You have to encourage it. Encourage the player to come back the next day. This is what players do, you know, in all sports. They have a bad day or bad at bat, whatever, bad outing. You got to come back. You got to come back from that. You got to let it slide off your back and come back. The greatest players, that they could do that, you know, every day. And so that's what I would suggest for the parents to really, you know, lift the kids up. I mean, don't put them down. And if you keep one of the terrible things to do is keep yelling at your kid in the game, oh, move your hands, oh, don't forget to keep your hands up, or you know, this and that, and they're yelling out, and I guarantee you the kid hears that, the parent's voice, I guarantee it, out of everybody else. So encourage them.
Rico, when did at what age were you when you realized that Major League Scouts had an interest in your talents?
Well, I was probably 15 or 16. Yeah, I was playing in a league that was old guys older than me. We played high school ball, and then the teams that I played outside of school, we played like 80 games a year, the cadets. So I had had scouts looking at me, and one doubleheader we had, there were like 18 scouts there. And in a doubleheader, I hit 5 home runs.
Wow! And
I'm telling you, but I think I had my eyes closed one time, and it well, I hit it and went out. It was just, like, incredible. And then afterwards, my brother was always at the games, and they scouts came down, gave their cards. Don't let him sign with anybody else until he talks with us, blah, 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 you know. And, oh, my God, five home runs, that really solidified it.
Wow.
But I loved to play. I went to – my brother took me to Yankee Stadium. He was a Yankee fan. Boo. No, and 7 years old, first time. And, oh, my God, when I went out there and sat and looked around that stadium and the grass and the players and the uniforms and, oh, boy,
yeah,
that was it. That was it. And so I always encourage parents, fathers especially, take the kids to the games because there's nothing like it. That's the environment that really excites you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Seeing, you know, walking up, my first Major League game was at Fenway, and, you know, just walking up the ramp and seeing all that green, you know.
Yep.
The grass, the green monster, the, you know, the center field walls, the bleachers, it was just amazing. And it really is. It's breathtaking because, you know, back then, Rico, we were just seeing the games on you know, black and white TV and not very many of those, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
and then
true,
you
but it, yeah, go ahead.
You see all that green. It's just amazing. And whether it be Yankee Stadium, which was, you know, a wonderful place to be back in that era, and Fenway Park. And, you know, it's really amazing. You know, Rico, you were a big part of that 1967 Red Sox team. And a lot of people today, you know, younger than us, don't realize that, you know, before 67, Fenway Park was not exactly sold out all the time. You know, I mean, you could sit just about anywhere you wanted. I mean, they had very, very small crowds. And at one point, there was some talk that the team, you know, might have been moved out of Boston because of lack of support. And then that 67 year turned it all around.
Yeah, you know, we didn't learn that until afterwards, years afterwards. But, yeah, the team was losing money in the Yawkey estate. They were pressuring, you know, him to do something. And so he tried to get I don't know if they tried to get a new stadium or refurbish Fenway, but the city wouldn't do it. And so there was talk about them moving either to the suburbs or out of Boston, you know, altogether, out of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of pressure. And so I think that was one of the reasons why the Red Sox decided to take all the young kids up. You know, I came up 65, and then 67, 66, about, I don't know, three or four more guys came up, young players. And then 67, when Dick Williams came, you know, Reggie Smith and Mike Andrews and all those guys, they came up. So we had a young team plus some very good veterans, great guys too, not just good players. And so, you know, the combination with that type of a team and also a four-team race helped us. You know, still, it was 100-to-1 shot, you know, and it came down to the last day. And so we went from, I think, was less than 10,000 opening day in 67 to, I think it was almost, they drew 1.8 million.
Yeah, which was unheard of. Yeah, back then.
Yeah, that was incredible. People were just it was so exciting, you know.
Yeah,
I was happy to be a part of that.
That was a transformational year for the franchise. No doubt about it. And Dan, you may not know that in that final game, October 1st against the Minnesota Twins, Rico made the final putout on a pop-up by Rich Rollins of the Twins. And you must, you know, I mean, that's something that fans of a certain age will never forget, Rico. I mean, and I'm sure you'll never forget that.
Yeah. Oh, no, that was, you know, it was a thrill just to be a part of it. And it wasn't ball wasn't very high because he got jammed. Jim Lomborg, great stuff.
Yeah, who went the distance, by the way. It was a complete game, folks, believe it or not, in these days. It was a complete game.
That's right. Yeah. You know, Dick Raddatz was one of the guys who made the closer famous, you know, but he went three innings, four innings, one game, seven innings to close the game, and he actually won it.
Yeah.
You know, so now it's one inning, and okay, you know.
Yeah.
It's not an easy inning, especially when you're on the road.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Rico, but, you're always so generous with your time. The last time I saw Rico, it was in an event for Brigadier General Donald Bolduc, and Rico, he's quite a guy.
Yeah, he's great. He's a real hero, and he's running for Senate. And you know, I love the veterans. Those guys are just heroes, men and women. And so Don, you know, I've been working with him in hopes that you know, he can win this election, which I think he can. It's really important, and you know, and we're getting into politics, but in view of what's happening, you know, now in our country, so it's going to be important to get people like him in Washington. So, anyway, yeah, he's a great guy.
No doubt about that, and served his country well for so many years, so many tours in Afghanistan, which is. You know, it's just beyond belief.
Oh,
he is something else, no doubt. A true American hero, without question.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so I've gone out a couple of appearances with him, and when I speak, I say, you know, people say, "Oh, a ball player, an athlete. Oh, he's playing with injuries. What a courageous guy. What a hero he is." Yeah, right. I said. Hero, my eye. You know, we're ball players. We go out there. You know, unless you can't really walk, you should be in the lineup. You know, the injury has to be bad. These guys, they're dodging bullets here. This is real life. I mean, it's incredible what they've done to be able to go out there and to really be willing to die. I mean, if you think about it, our veterans. In Korea and Vietnam and you know, Iraq and all of this. Just to me, the more you think about it, wow, they really are heroes. That's how I feel. So our veterans are special.
No doubt about that. And Rico Petrocelli, so are you. You are a treasure. You have been for a long time, and you've accomplished so many things in your career and continue to do so. And it's always always a pleasure to have you with us.
I appreciate it. Just another guy. I mean, come on. You know, I know we're out of time, but it's okay to respect the players, but don't make them heroes and gods. I mean, because they're no different than you. We're no different than anybody else. Flesh and blood.
Very cool.
You got it, Rico.
Yeah.
You got it. Thank you so much for being on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's great being on with you guys. Take care.
All right,
have
Rico. And we'll have
right.
you, have you
care,
back
Ken.
Soon. Take care.
All righty. Yeah. Take care.
All right. You
Bye-bye.
Too, Rico. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Rico Petrocelli, Red Sox Hall of Famer, just a terrific guy and has been. I've known Rico for quite some time and just a very genuine guy, no question.
Yeah, yeah.
WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, and now Dan Feltus, 101.9 FM in Manchester.
Got a new antenna.
And that's right, and nhtalkradio.com, let's not forget about that, where people can listen everywhere, including Iowa. You can even get that in Iowa.
You can get it in Iowa, and you know what? People are subscribing to this all around the country and the world. You know, we got an antenna in the capital city, got an antenna in the Queen City. And you can just log on in any city, Ken.
That's it.
Any city.
And if you happen to miss one of the Feltus and Kale programs or A.J. Kierstead in the morning or some of the great shows that Matt Robeson and Paul Hodes do or, you know, my show with Jane Cormier or Jane's great new show as well. You know, it's just terrific programming. And it's local programming, and that's... That's what makes it so special. All right, we'll have to take a break. Feltus and Kale presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, as well as Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord as well, and 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. You can get us virtually anywhere you go. Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Serving the Concord area since 1995, you can call them. Bobby and Charlie probably standing by right now at 603-225-7988. Or you can book an appointment online at weedfamilyautomotive.com. It's where Dan and I take our vehicles to be serviced. Although, I guess, Dan, you're going to have to find a new shop out in Iowa. And I'm sure you must be familiar with a few anyway.
Well, you know, look, I don't think there's any replacing Weed Family Automotive. We took their cars there for years. But you're right, Kenny. You know, there's going to be a little bit of a move here. You know, Aaron got a great job in Iowa City, Deputy Counsel for the University of Iowa. And both Aaron and I grew up in Iowa. And Iris and Josie are two amazing young daughters, age 3 and 4, will be have an opportunity to be around their cousins, aunts, uncles, and their grandparents. And obviously, that's a big deal. And COVID has only heightened the importance of that for us, like so many. So, you know, we'll miss New Hampshire, no doubt about it. But it's an incredible opportunity for our family, and that's what counts.
Yeah, it really is. It is all about family, and we can all respect that. We will miss you, but Dan has promised to call in from time to time.
I will call in and harass you.
And it's going to be a lot of fun because here we are in the first in the nation primary state in New Hampshire, and Dan will be in the opening caucus state of Iowa. So for a while anyway, the focus will be on those two states as we get set for the 2024 presidential campaign.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It'll be interesting, and look forward to ongoing call-ins and that sort of thing. It'll be good. It'll be good.
No doubt about it. We'll take a quick break here. Feldis and Kale, WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. We are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and now at 101.9 FM Manchester, covering Manchester, Goffstown, Bedford, and nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. And Dan, talking with Rico Petrocelli on this show. Rico is a fun guy and was certainly a big part of the 1967 Impossible Dream Red Sox. And the year before that, Dan, 1966, the Red Sox finished a half game out of last place in 66. The Yankees were the cellar dwellers that year. And in 67, the Red Sox involved in that four-team race, finally advancing to the World Series, losing in 7 games to the St. Louis Cardinals. But it was a terrific World Series as well. Rico was a big part of it. But that really, and this is no exaggeration, and Rico and everyone knew it at the time, that the Red Sox were in danger of going elsewhere.
Yeah, you know,
because attendance was terrible. I mean, they went from like 500,000 in 1966 for season attendance to, as Rico said in 67, 1.8 million.
Right.
And it was just a transformative year and turned the entire franchise around.
And Ken, I think we've talked about the season a couple times on the show, but a lot of the same players.
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah.
It was basically just a coaching change.
Different manager, Dick Williams, who really, he said in spring training, we'll win more than we lose. Everybody laughed at him because the Red Sox hadn't done that in a long time. Not only did they win more than they lost, but they went to the World Series and took it 7 games against a great St. Louis team. Dan, we're going to have to wrap it up for this edition of Feldis and Kale. Thanks for joining us. Join us next time on this program. We will be happy to have you with us. Brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and Weed Family Automotive.